featuring over 80 local students and guest artists from the Joffrey Ballet. Tickets and information at classicaldancearts.com. Support for The Morning Show comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information is available at carthage.edu/grad. Support for The Morning Show also comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. And we welcome you to the Thursday Morning Show on WGTDHD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg. It's really been a terrific week on The Morning Show, if I do say so myself. We've talked about Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker, about the wonderful musical Mary Poppins, tomorrow Frank Sinatra, on the eve of his 100th birthday. And today, I'm delighted that we can welcome back to our studios, first of all, Nan Calvert, for the monthly environmentally minded program under the auspices of the United Environmental Council. And it was Nan's great idea to bring into our studios today for this particular program the new executive director of Racine's Eco Justice Center, Allison Thielen. And for those of you who have not been there, the Eco Justice Center is a beautiful, idyllic little corner of the community that everybody needs to visit. It is an inspiring and beautiful place in so many different ways. So anyway, first of all, Allison Thielen is in our studios along with Nan Calvert. We welcome both of you to The Morning Show.
Thank you. Good morning.
Thank you for having us.
Good to have you here. So Nan, tell us what prompted this invitation from you to Allison.
Well, you know, Greg, you're right. The Racine Dominican Eco Justice Center is this beautiful, idyllic place in Racine. But it's also kind of a big deal. A lot of really great stuff happens there, great stuff that has, sort of a ripple effect, far-reaching consequences in a good way. And recently, there's been a changing of the guard, as it were, a passing of the torch. And that, too, is a big deal. And I thought it was a really good idea to have Allison on and sort of like an unveiling, introduce her to everybody. So
and this
that's
is a
why
nice,
she's here.
It's a, and I'm glad you came up with that. I'm just curious, Nan, before we meet Allison, what was your very first time on the grounds of the Eco Justice Center? Do you even remember now?
It was when it started, actually. I was involved in it from pretty much the time it got started. And, you know, I've taught there. I've been on the board of directors. I've been on a number of committees. And so I have a long and much beloved history with the Eco Justice Center. So, you know, these kinds of things are hard. And most of us thought that Sister Janet would, you know, be the executive director forever, and we wouldn't. But, you know, reality comes into play, and now we have a wonderful, young, talented, energetic person. Sister Janet is certainly there. She will always be there. But now it's, you know, there's going to be some new directions taken that will only enhance the Eco Justice Center and make it even a bigger deal than it already is.
Very good. Well, with that enormous buildup, again, we welcome you to the morning show, Allison. Before we learn a little bit more specifically about the Eco Justice Center, let's find out a little bit about you, where you come from originally, and give us at least kind of a general sense of the path which ultimately led you to Racine and the Eco Justice Center.
Yes, thank you. I was born and raised in Racine, just north of here, rather, and I went to college at UW-Whitewater, where I received a degree in ecology and environmental studies focus. From there, I went and I worked for Prairie Nursery up in Westfield, Wisconsin, for a while, working on habitat restoration, and became very passionate about, you know, the need for more natural spaces and the need for people to live more closely with the earth and to feel connected and understand that we are all, you know, part of this natural world that we have here. So I eventually was led to work for the Root Pike Watershed Initiative Network, which is also based in Racine, but who does work restoring watersheds all throughout southeastern Wisconsin. And from there, I applied and was lucky enough to be hired as this new executive director position at the Eco Justice Center.
Very good. Let's rewind for just a moment. This passion you have for the world around us, the well-being of the environment, and so on. It obviously was already in place by the time you graduated from high school, because you chose the academic discipline that you did when you went to the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater. Can you trace kind of the development of this? I mean, did you, you know, from the womb, were you already concerned about this? Or, I mean, what ended up fostering this interest and this passion?
Yeah, well, I do remember back in about fourth grade, there was a lot of campaigns going on to promote the idea of recycling. And that was the first inkling I had about how important it was to, you know, reuse our materials. And the first time I really understood that there is a finite amount of things on the earth, and everything that we do, all the actions we take, directly impact that. So as I got to high school, I had a wonderful biology teacher. Her name was Peggy. I went to Walden 3 Alternative School in Racine, so we called all of our teachers by their first names. But Peggy Huset Duros, who was extremely passionate as well about the natural world and the environment. And so she really fostered it more in me, and I knew that I was going to go into a field of science in college, and was unsure exactly which one that would be until I took my first environmental studies class.
And it's like, this is where I belong.
Correct, yeah.
Very good. Just briefly, I want to find out a little bit more about the things that you did when you were employed by the nursery up north and engaged in prairie restoration. Just say a word about that sort of work.
Sure. I was actually hired as a seed production specialist. So it's a native plant nursery, and they have you know, hundreds of acres of native prairie plants that they grow mostly to harvest their seeds. And so I was you know, one of the heads of the crew who worked on all of that and processing the seeds in the barn throughout the winter in these mills. But I also was put in charge of the research and development portion of the farm, where we were working with interesting hybrids of the native plants. And I got to reorganize that and restructure it a bit, catalog it some more. So that was a fun part of the job. But I also went out with the restoration team from time to time. I had had training with an internship with Midwest Prairies out of Fort Atkinson, where I learned to drive tractors with any implement you can imagine, even big case combines. And so they would have me go out for these big prairie restoration installation jobs, where, you know, I would either be directly planting the seed with the tractor, or, you know, preparing the soil for the seed. But going out, really, and a lot of what we were doing was converting old farm fields back into their native state.
Huh. Well, that's probably one of a number of ways in which the path before Eco Justice has prepared you well for all the different things that you have to attend to. Talk for a moment about the work you've done with watershed restoration a little bit closer to home. First of all, just remind our listeners of what that means.
Yeah, well, you know, Root Pike Wind's mission says a lot of it. They work to protect, restore, and sustain the ecosystems in the local watersheds. And so, you know, a watershed is simply an area of land where all of the water runs off into one place. And often it is based around a river. For instance, we've got the Pike River, which runs right through Kenosha here. And we did a lot of work with watershed planning, so watershed restoration planning. Where we would work with advisory committees, large groups of professionals and educators and municipal representatives that would help guide the creation and writing of a watershed restoration plan. It's a comprehensive document, very scientific. We contracted consultants to write them. But the outcome of these plans is that there is a long list of prioritized restoration projects that are set to make the biggest difference as far as removing pollutants from the watershed or, you know, changing people's behaviors and knowledge about how they can make a difference. And the plans are also written to all conform with the EPA's 9 elements of a watershed restoration plan, which is important because that helps folks get funding for the projects that are prioritized in those plans.
So it's a very comprehensive kind of approach then to deal with the problem.
Yeah, it's kind of a behind-the-scenes type of approach is what Root Pike Wind does. But they also do a lot of PR, and they've got a great Respect Our Waters campaign, which is a media campaign to basically teach homeowners things that they can do on their own properties to help reduce stormwater runoff pollution.
Right. Well, at some point, apparently, you decided it was time to get your hands dirty a little bit. Became aware of this vacancy that was going to be coming up with Sister Janet shifting into a different role?
I did become aware, yeah. I was well aware of the Eco Justice Center already, and I've got a close friend in the city of Racine who is the same person who put the Root Pike Wind position across my desk, and she gave me this posting for this position as well very early on in the process, and so it was it seemed like a long hiring process, but really I think they just planned it so well, and Sister Janet gave them so much notice that it was very well done.
Very good. Well, let's find out, first of all, a little bit of the history of the Eco Justice Center in terms of when it was constructed. And it sounds like Nan will be able to chime in with some information as well, since she was actually around and actually a part of the creation of it from the sounds of it.
Yeah. Well, the Eco Justice Center came out of a group of Dominican sisters who thought they were looking at all of the different ministries that they've got, and there are a lot of social justice issues being dealt with in the city of Racine through their ministries, but they felt that there was a bit of a gap in care for the earth and environmental issues, and they wanted to create a ministry that would cover that. And so in 2004, it was October of 2004, they established and founded the Eco Justice Center. It's on 15 acres of land right near Cliffside Park in Caledonia, north of Racine. And the mission that they established was environmental education and care of the earth in the context of what we call our four C's, which is community, contemplation, creativity, and cultivation. So from that point on, they began to restore some of the buildings that were on the property. There was an old farmhouse from 1912 that only had 3 bedrooms, and there were 6 sisters that wanted to move in there and be active parts of the Eco Justice Center. And so they found a green-minded architect to help design and build a large addition to the home. And it's got all kinds of wonderful features. They've reused many different things. For instance, the kitchen counter and sink, which is very large and beautiful, it's from an old shower stall that was torn down at Siena Center. And so, you know, that's just one example of how they've reused materials, building materials, and all kinds of things in the house, whether it's flooring or roofing, wall boards, just to repurpose the items and keep them out of the landfill.
I'm trying to remember the story of how they came to possess this particular bit of land. I mean, I remember Sister Janet telling the story, but I can't remember now the specifics of it. Do you happen to know?
Yeah, I know the basics of it. So the Journal Times, the Racine Journal Times, got wind of the sisters that were looking to purchase land and to start this center. And one of the headlines that they put on the front page of the paper, which took people aback a little bit, it said something along the lines of, Dominican nuns are about to be homeless. Something like that, which caught the eye of many people, but it definitely caught the eye of former county executive Dennis Cornwolf. And he is the he was the property owner of the land where the EcoJustice sits today. So he invited the sisters to come and have coffee with him in the farmhouse where they now live and work, and to talk about what their needs were, what they were looking for. And it was just a perfect arrangement. He wanted to give back to them, and at the same time, the land was almost perfect. It had everything they were looking for, which was, you know, of course, a house they could live in, farm outbuildings for keeping animals and equipment and things, and then also lots of land. They wanted pasture land, possibly some natural wetlands and woods. So it really seemed to fit quite well. There was plenty of space for organic gardening, which was another thing that was important to them.
Nan, what are your recollections of the earliest days of the EcoJustice Center? First of all, how did you come to be involved in it from such an early point?
I was teaching at River Bend Nature Center, and strangely, Sister Janet thought she had time to volunteer. And so she came.
to River Bend?
At River Bend. And so she and I met there, we got to talking about different things, and then I lived very close to the EcoJustice Center at the time, and just ended up somehow or another on committees and also helping to teach the summer camps and other duties as assigned as the years rolled on. So that's how I became involved. And I think when you asked me what's my earliest recollection, what came into my mind was a flurry of activity. Just a flurry of activity, and also the ability with which Janet had and has to make things happen, because the world is one of possibility, and no doesn't really exist. And so in a relatively short period of time, there were solar panels on the granary, there was a geothermal field, and of course the stately and beautiful wind turbine. Then the Hermitage was built, the education station, built on the footprint of what was an original building there, and just amazing things happening every single time you turn around.
Well, I like how you describe the fact that, I mean, we both use the word idyllic to describe this little corner of the north side of Racine in Caledonia, and yet there's always things going on, and it's a place where a lot of hard work occurs and lots of activity. So it's not just this pristine, quiet place where you wander around in the lovely silence. I mean, it's kind of an interesting mix, isn't it?
It really is.
Of silence and activity.
Yeah, and that's really where the four C's come in, because, you know, contemplation is one of those. And so we do have a kind of a whole section of our property that is set aside for contemplative retreats. We have our Hermitage cabin that people can stay in if they need to get away. And it's in the woods, and they're surrounded by wooded paths. We currently have a labyrinth, which is near our parking lot, and we have plans to move that to our back garden area in the spring, which will be put it right next to the wooded paths and the whole kind of serene area, our contemplative area of our property.
We should probably explain to those that don't know what we're talking about that a labyrinth is designed as sort of an intricate pathway that one walks in, kind of it's a special discipline of contemplation that is very special to some people.
It is, and there's many different walks and many different ways to use a labyrinth. It's not faith specific or anything. It can be a meditative tool for people.
So let's talk for a moment. Actually, before we do that, let's reintroduce you. For any of you just joining us, I'm speaking today on The Morning Show not only with our good friend Nan Calvert, who joins us once a month, but also Allison Thielen, who is the new executive director of the EcoJustice Center, which is located on the far north side of Racine. Or were you saying it's actually in Caledonia?
It's technically in the village of Caledonia,
okay.
Yes.
And it is a beautiful place, a working farm, and that engages in all kinds of sustainable practices. And it's a place where beautiful art is created, and where you can meet wonderful, interesting animals, and take various classes, And a number of Dominican sisters live right on the property and care for it with such great devotion. Let's talk about sort of the farm part of the Ecojustice Center. Tell us what is all involved, what all is part of that facet of the operation there.
Okay, sure. Well, you know, what we have to do daily is care for our animals, so I'm inclined to speak about them first. And they are an intricate part of the whole natural system that makes up the sustainable living that happens at the center. But we have five alpacas, and they're all males, and they're all wonderful. Friar Tuck, Grant, Theo, Aldo, and the last one is Gaylord. And Gaylord is our friendliest alpaca. And so what they do is they provide us with fiber. They are sheared once every June. And so then there's fiber that can be processed and can be made into yarn, can be felted. Lots of wonderful things can be made out of that fiber. But we also use their manure on a daily basis, and that goes into our compost. And that compost then is used to start our organic gardens every spring, and we've actually spread it in the fall as well to really get our soil prepared. We also have four goats. The goats are they're very tame. They're more like pets than anything. We certainly are not raising them for meat. We also use their manure on a regular basis to add to our compost. But they also serve as a good teaching tool for the children that come through. The children love to see the animals, and they love the goats. And we do have ecology camps during spring break and throughout the summer as well for students between the ages of 5 and 14, depending on which camp you attend. But we've also got about 37 chickens right now. So we're collecting eggs on a daily basis, and we sell the eggs. They're wonderful eggs. Some of our chickens are Araucana chickens, which means their eggs are different colors. They're blues and greens. And sometimes we even see pinks and almost a light orange colored eggs. So they're beautiful eggs, but they're also richer in taste than something you'd buy at the regular grocery store. So we've got all of the animals that we interact with on a regular basis. But then, you know, of course, our gardens are a big part of what we do. And we really like to incorporate education with our organic gardening. We're not certified organic, certainly, but all of our practices are without chemicals. They're all natural methods. We use the compost. We use some permaculture. And one of the programs that's kind of springing out of this, teaching people how to do organic gardening, is a youth farm corps for next summer. And that should be really exciting, because we are going to hire a college-aged person as more or less a crew leader, and then three high school students who will work for about 8 weeks throughout the summer and a little bit of training in the spring, and they will learn everything about organic gardening, from planting to weeding to all the way to the harvest. And then they will learn how to take those harvested produce and fruits and things, and they will learn how to cook with them. And then they'll go out in the community, and they will do small workshops and cooking demonstrations and teach people in food desert areas how to cook with fresh produce, and they will also provide that produce that's needed for the recipes right there on the spot.
Wow, what a great idea.
Yeah.
So another new initiative. So by and large, as far as you know, has the kind of the agricultural operation, if we want to call it that, has that changed very much over the years, or by and large has the original vision been pretty much maintained?
Well, as far as I know, I believe that most of it has stayed, as far as the gardens in size, have stayed about the same since the property was started for the center. Recently, though, it was expanded. And this past year, we created a plot out in the hayfield near the wind turbine that is about, I'd say, 100 feet by 50 feet. And it's currently split in half, and it's planted with two different types of cover crops for the winter. And out there is an exciting new development as well. We are in the process of erecting a 48-foot by 22-foot hoop house. It's a movable hoop house, and that will allow us to farm or garden all year round.
Yeah, I happen to know that because my folks do something similar in Madison, but I have a feeling a lot of our listeners don't even know what you're talking about. It's a little bit like a greenhouse.
Oh, very much like a greenhouse, yes. So it will keep the soil warmer and the air temperatures warmer throughout the winter, so we can plant winter-type crops now, and they will grow, and we will be able to harvest them at unusual times of the year. But we can also get all of our spring and summer crops started much earlier than we normally would, which is important for the Farm Corps, because you know, of course, these students are only off of school for a couple of months in the summer, so they wouldn't really be able to see start to finish if it weren't for this hoop house allowing us to start things much earlier than we normally would so that we can have things to harvest for them right away.
Right. As we were talking about this menagerie that is such an important part of the Eco Justice Center, you didn't make mention of the geese that usually make their presence known in really dramatic ways.
Yeah, well, we have four geese currently, two Canada geese, and then we have two alarm geese. And the alarm geese are the ones you are referencing. All four of our geese hang out together almost all the time. But the alarm geese are quite large, and they're quite noisy. What I know about them is that years ago they were used in prison yards. There's always the two different layers of fencing around the perimeter of a prison yard. Usually there's barbed wire across the top, and then they would have guards in between those two fences patrolling. Well, they found out that they wouldn't have to use those guards anymore if they would simply put alarm geese in there, because the moment one of those alarm geese sees a person, they make a racket. And so that is part of why they're called alarm geese. But yes, in our farm, they are simply spending a lot of time in the pond. They're beautiful creatures, but they are a little bit defensive of our property. And so we often have to tell people about them and how to approach them when they arrive at the center.
One of my memories of the last time that I was there, it was something I hadn't noticed before. Somewhere in the kind of the farm area, kind of around where the chickens are kept, is some kind of plaque on the wall with the names of various children who I think have been stung. Is that right?
That's right, yes.
Tell our
list.
Listeners what I'm talking about then.
Yeah, stung by wasps. It's the Brave Wasp List or something. It's called
something
similar
like that.
Yeah, and Sister Janet's name is on there along with some of the kids that attend camp. So we'll keep the list going and maybe make it more formal at some point, because it is, you know, quite a feat to be attacked by wasps and still want to stay at camp and come back the next day.
Absolutely. And it's like this badge of honor where that happens to you, but you survive it and keep on smiling somehow. And that part of it is to get your name adorned on this list of those privileged to have been stung by a wasp at the Eco Justice Center.
Yes, why not celebrate it rather than look at it as a bad thing?
Right.
It's part of nature.
Part of that kind of barn structure where the chickens are is also a really interesting space for presentations and so on. Try to describe that to our listeners.
Well, our barn is from the mid-1800s, and it's an unusual configuration. There is a ground level space that's large enough to accommodate some long tables and maybe 50 people if you really squeeze them in. But then there are two lofted areas on either side that are not as high as a traditional hay loft. They're just a few steps up, and we have hay on one side and our magic school bus replica. Mm. And the kids love that in the summer. But on the other side, we have just many tables and chairs so that people can host gatherings and things in there when the weather is right. It's unheated, of course. It's an old barn, and we want to keep it in its original state as much as possible. But the reason that it's an odd configuration architecturally is because they had horses underneath one side where it's raised up just a bit, and then they had cows on the other side where it's raised up just a bit. And there are actually trap doors on that main level so that the farmers could simply open up the trap doors and, you know, throw the hay or the food in for the animals and shut them again without having to actually enter the horse barn or the cow or the cow barn.
There you go.
Yeah.
So talk about the array of courses or workshops or that kind of thing, the real educational wing of what happens at the Eco Justice Center, and just what kind of a wide array are we talking about?
Yeah, it's a wide variety. We have workshops and events for adults, families, and children alike throughout the year, and the adult workshops can vary. They can be anything from an origami mobile workshop to a meditative mandala workshop. So those are kind of the creativity parts of what we do. We have had a workshop on cooking or baking with herbs. We've had workshops on beekeeping. We actually have another beekeeping workshop coming up on January 16th called Beezentation. We've got the Seasons of the Sun celebrations that we do as well on top of all the varied workshops. And those happen at the winter and summer solstice and also the spring and fall equinox. Those are wonderful seasonal celebrations. I would call them, they would touch upon eco-spirituality, getting people more connected to the earth and the changing of seasons. And we celebrate the changing of seasons at these events by there's music incorporated, some poetry, oftentimes an interactive type of activity where someone could, for instance, place a candle and as they place the candle, put out a wish for the earth. What is their wish for the earth? And so often we often include hikes on these as well, and some fun fellowship time. We ask people who attend to bring an appetizer so that we can socialize afterwards. But we find that these are so popular that the next one, which is the winter solstice celebration on Monday, December 21st at 6:30, we are for the first time having to ask people to pre-register because we can only fit so many people in the great room of the house, which is where one of the main ceremonies happen that evening. So people are asked to register on our website, which is just simply ecojusticecenter.org.
A couple of things you've said prompt me to ask this, and I think it's important to kind of give this some clarity because, I mean, the impetus for creating all this was the Dominican sisters from the Siena Center. And so we obviously associate them pretty specifically with the Catholic faith. And yet this, in creating the Eco Justice Center, it sounds like the sisters are trying to be true to the faith which they themselves hold dear and yet have not tried to turn this into some kind of center that is ostensibly Catholic at every turn. Or, I mean, that it isn't that you should be Catholic or need to be Catholic, or if you're Catholic, you're especially going to appreciate the Eco Justice Center. I mean, there's a real sense of openness and inclusiveness in what you do.
Yes, absolutely. That is a good observation, and it is true that in all of our programming, everything that we do, we intentionally don't ever promote the Catholic faith specifically. You know, we believe that all people are of equal value and equal worth, and they all deserve to learn to be to live more sustainable lives, to live in closer connection with the earth and with nature. And we certainly wouldn't want any of our differences to prevent that from happening. And, you know, our sisters are involved in some interfaith groups, and we find that oftentimes when different faiths come together for a similar mission, such as the environment, they are much more powerful forces than if they are to remain separate. Hmm.
So what do the sisters who live there do by and large? I mean, how do they fill the days and fill the nights?
Yes, well, there are currently six people living in the house, and four of them are Dominican sisters. So there is Sister Janet Weicker, who's our former executive director, and I am just thrilled that she is currently serving as our volunteer coordinator. So she's doing it as a volunteer, but she coordinates all of our volunteers. And we have over 5,000 volunteer hours that are put in at the center every single year. And so there are people there sometimes literally 7 days a week. And because she's there 7 days a week, she's able to schedule them to come in to help manage the things that they do. And it's just wonderful having her in that role. And then we've got Sister Rosemary. And Sister Rosemary also puts in lots of time on the grounds of the center. She works with a couple of the special groups that come on out. There is a group from the Lakeside Curative Services that comes out every Monday, and she tends to work with them. She also gives tours when needed. She works in the gardens, and she's kind of our plastic bag guru as well. So she takes care of all of our plastic bags and making sure that they are recycled or reused in any way that she can. So she's passionate about the use of plastic and really trying to reduce it or at least reuse these items and make sure that they don't end up in our landfills or oceans. Then we have Sister Marianne Weicker, and Sister Marianne holds a position, a daily job over at Siena Center, and so does Sister Kathleen, who lives there as well. So they are gone during the day, but in the evenings and weekends, they are more than happy to help out wherever needed. We are also very fortunate right now to have Sister Kristen Tomey living in the house. She's a young Dominican novice from the Sinsinawa area. Oh. And she is spending a year at the center simply studying, learning more about sustainability, and She is capable of almost anything. I have been so impressed with her and her her passion, her work ethic, her positivity. I think she has brought so many wonderful things to the center, and we're very lucky to have her there this year. And the final person who lives in the house is Kate Kirby. And Kate is actually a staff member. She's a layperson. And she has lived there since 3 years ago when she worked for a year as a Dominican volunteer. And she continued to live there, and she was hired on as a permanent employee. And her title is the assistant to the director, but she does much more than that. Mm. She has a lot to do with our programming and our marketing and our social media, and she's done some grant writing. Kate is just a wonderful addition as well.
Mm. And I know you have other staff besides that. I mean, there was some guy driving around a little tractor sort of vehicle, so there's other staff as well that assist?
Right. We are a small staff. It's myself and Kate, and then we have a part-time grounds person. So that's Michael Rashke, and he is also wonderful. There's a good story about Michael. He is currently a college student, but he came to the center as a 10-year-old volunteer.
Uh-huh.
And he loved it so much that the sisters would go and pick him up at his house after school every day for many years until he could drive.
Wow.
And when he was still in high school, they took the plunge and decided to hire him as an actual employee. He was putting in so much time and doing so many innovative projects. He's got a real passion for really anything maintenance-wise. He can fix small engines when needed. He can come up with creative solutions to animal feeder problems or you name it. He is a huge asset to the organization.
Hmm. Are there ever disagreements or differences of opinion when it comes to what should be done next? What should we do with this plot of land over here? Or what is the really best practice for such and such? I mean, I think when a lot of us imagine a place like you are describing, it's hard to imagine so much as a difference of opinion ever intruding into the proceedings. But I should think different people have different ideas about what living sustainably maybe means, or what's going to be practical, or what is in the best interests of the Ecojustice Center in the immediate future versus long-term planning or whatever. Just talk about the way in which decisions get made. Or are you just the boss and whatever you say goes?
No, we have a lot of collaboration. We have a very active board. We have a buildings and grounds committee. And out of that, we also spurred a site planning committee, essentially. Mm. So we started to engage due to some funding from the Racine Community Foundation. We were able to hire some consultants to do site plans for us.
Ah.
And so this is one way that all of our different ideas were able to be brought to the same place on the same day, and we were able to plan for the future of the center and plan for it in such a way as, you know, how is the land going to be laid out best to meet our needs? Is there a possibility of purchasing some additional land adjacent? And if we were able to do that, what would we want to use that land for? And certainly there were lots of disagreements. We were in three different groups, and each group came up with their own version of an ideal site plan for the center. And then the professionals were able to take those and create, you know, more official documents that we now use for site planning. We have three alternatives, but they all have similarities. They all have slight differences as well. But a lot of it depends upon, you know, acquisition of land. And we are moving forward with as many things on the site plan as we can. And some of those include right now we have our goats outside in the field, and they are grazing. Now, our goats normally live in a small barnyard adjacent to their barn area, and we decided that it would be great for several reasons to buy some solar-powered electric fencing that is movable. So our hay field, which is about 7 acres of our land, it's a good portion, it hasn't been properly fertilized for a while. We were a little disappointed with the quality of the hay this past year. And so getting the goats out on that hay field, we are allowing them to graze, which is a more natural way for them to be eating. And it allows them to kind of stretch out their food throughout the day instead of chomping down all their hay in like 3 bites.
Mm.
So, you know, they're regulating their digestive systems. It's good for them. But they're also, you know, using it as a giant bathroom, and they are in the process fertilizing that hayfield for us. And so every few days, when it looks like they've munched a good amount of the grass there, we move the fencing over to the next spot, and we put them out there for at least 4 hours every day. So that's an exciting change that we've had as a result of the site plan.
Huh.
Yeah, and another one is the hoop house, which I already mentioned, putting up that hoop house and using more of the land out in the hayfield as garden space, especially moving forward with the Farm Corps program. That will be important to have more. But also, another thing, one of the first things I noticed when I did my first walk around tour with my director's hat on was we have a huge compost pile. And it's wonderful because we have this, you know, amazing compost that comes out of it, and we grow beautiful produce because of it. But it was right next to the little creek that runs through our property. And, you know, from my training at Root Pike Wynn, I know that every time it rains, that everything in that compost pile is being washed into that creek. And the creek feeds into a pond, which then has an outfall that goes to Lake Michigan eventually. And so we are in the process of now moving our compost pile to the other side of the creek on a much higher land area, and there's going to be a berm between the compost and the creek so that we can't have that runoff problem anymore. We're helping to keep our, you know, water clean, and we're going to take the current place where the compost pile is, and we're going to plant it with native seed. And so we will have a great native prairie area and a little bit of a prairie-type woodland combination, I guess oak savanna style habitat there.
You should see the love lights in Nan's eyes as you're saying that. You're talking her language there, aren't you? Speaking of compost, I remember the last time I was at the EcoJustice Center on this tour, Sister Janet was so proud, couldn't wait to show us a relatively new addition to the Hermitage, which is that beautiful little like a cottage almost that's on the grounds, which somebody, I suppose, can rent for a beautiful retreat of one kind or another. But recently added to that little hermitage, that beautiful little cottage, was a compost toilet. I'd never heard of such a thing before, but it's the latest rage, I guess.
Yes, there's no running water in the Hermitage, and so they needed something other than using the house bathroom or the education center bathroom or building an outhouse. They needed something in there for folks who rent it, and it is rented very often, to be honest. And so, yes, there's a composting toilet in there. It's a little unfamiliar for folks, but there's directions on the wall on how to use it. It basically has to do with adding a scoop of peat moss after you use it every time, which helps neutralize some things. And we have to clean it out a couple times a year. But for the most part, it's a very natural way to use the bathroom.
There you go. The things you learn, the things you see at the EcoJustice Center. So what are you, you've touched on a few kind of smaller matters. I mean, they're significant, but in terms of the operation, what are some ways in which you see the EcoJustice Center maybe forging some new pathways in the years to come?
Yeah, well, I think one thing we want to definitely do, and we're working very hard on our programming to do this, is to reach more people, particularly in food desert areas, in some of the inner city neighborhoods. We have a funding right now to bring 10 kids to summer camp next summer who otherwise wouldn't be able to attend. And so they are being selected by one of the local cop houses in downtown Racine area. So that's wonderful. And to get these kids out there and to get them learning about organic gardening and maybe going home and asking their parents to start a garden or to eat more locally. So that's exciting. We've also had some issues, and I touched on this briefly before. We've had some real issues with outgrowing our facilities. And, you know, oftentimes our programs, we can barely handle them with the amount of space that we have, particularly our indoor space. We've got plenty of outdoor space. For instance, we only have one public bathroom. And I don't mean one bathroom with several stalls. We have one bathroom. And so there are times that we will get 100 kids that come on two buses for a school field trip, and they're going to be there for 2 to 3 hours taking tours and doing activities, maybe felting beads out of alpaca fiber or something fun. But you know, they're going to have to use the bathroom while they're out there, and we have one for all of them to share. So there's that. We have group gatherings such as these Seasons of the Sun celebrations where we're now having to limit the capacity. We want to be able to open these things up to as many people as possible. So one of the things that's on our site plans that all three of the planning groups agreed upon is a large multi-purpose building. And so we're thinking approximately 5,000 square feet, somewhere near the road so that it's visible, be made in a very green fashion, with reused materials wherever possible, designed in such a way to, you know, reduce stormwater runoff, and certainly we would have renewable energy sources that were specific to that building itself. But that would really give us some of the tools that we need as far as larger spaces for workshops and meetings. We could have a real office space instead of being in a little loft. We could have our gift shop there, our produce stand, and a very exciting part of that would be to have a commercial kitchen. And we've, you know, we've talked about teaching young students how to cook with the produce that they grow themselves. Well, right now we have a couple of portable burners, but that's about all we have, and we can't fit even a full range in our current facility. And so to have a commercial kitchen, I think, would be huge. And there are also workshops that it could be used for adults, where we teach them how to use herbs and organic produce to make soups and breads and all kinds of wonderful things.
Well, that is an exciting possibility, isn't it? We hope that comes true in the near future. That would only enhance the exciting things that go on there.
Can you talk about the oven that was recently built?
Oh, yes, I can. So we recently constructed a brick oven, and it is outdoors. It's right on the north side of our barn, and it is an outdoor oven that is fired by wood. It was constructed largely by our board president, Charlie Tennyson, and as well also Sister Kristen Tomey, who I mentioned, who lives there. A lot of masonry went into it. There's special fire bricks that are needed for it. But what this thing does is you can build a fire in it, get it going about 3 hours before you want to cook anything, and then it will cook a pizza in less than 2 minutes. You can do loaves of bread, and you can literally keep this thing hot for hours and hours. You know, much later in the day after the fire's been going for 8 hours, it's still hot enough in there to be able to bake some things. And so it is somewhat of a sustainable way to cook outdoors. We're simply using wood, and we do have a lot of wood that was cut down right on our own property for one reason or another. Some of the more undesirable non-native trees. We have a problem with the emerald ash borer, like many others do. But, you know, it is something that will also allow us to bring the community in more often, because we do have these twice a year so far. We do pizza bakes. And so we invite people to come on out and to make their own pizza. We provide all the food that's needed, you know, the dough, the cheese, the, you know, tomato sauce, all the wonderful organic toppings. People assemble their own pizzas, and they take them out to this brick oven. And 2 minutes later, they have a steaming hot pizza that they can eat, that they built themselves, that was cooked outdoors, and that is all organic.
How exciting is that? If people want to see sort of a full calendar of events going on at the Eco Justice Center, or learn even more about it, or see beautiful images from it, tell them what the website address is.
Yes, our website is www.ecojusticecenter.org. There's no dashes in there. It's all one word.
Ecojusticecenter.org.
That's correct.
And I do want to say that it is a beautiful place, very much worth visiting. So if you've never been to the Eco Justice Center, you need to do something about that. It is a place everybody needs to see and experience. Allison Thielen, it's been just great to visit with you and meet you, and to hear about the exciting things that are going on at the Eco Justice Center. We wish you and the sisters only the very, very best in the years to come.
Thank you very much.
Good to have you here, Nan. I'm glad you issued this invitation. What a great idea.
Well, thank you. I'm glad she was able to make it, too.
Right. What are some of the other things going on you want to tell people about?
Always lots going on. In spite of the fact that it doesn't look anything like it, it is time for the Christmas bird count. And our friends at Hoy Audubon invite you to participate in the 116th year of this nationwide activity. Go to www.christmasbirdcount.org. This is citizen science in action. It's not just a fun thing to do. The data that's collected from the Christmas bird count is used to tally up what's been seen, how many, when, and all those kinds of things. So the Racine Christmas bird count is Saturday, December 19th. The Christmas bird count in Burlington is December 15th. And the Kenosha Christmas bird count is Tuesday, December 22nd. You can also go to the Hoy Audubon website and learn much, much more about it. Hawthorne Hollow, their last day of being open is December 23rd. They close for the season. They'll reopen to the public on March 1st, 2016. So get out there and enjoy Hawthorne Hollow before they shutter up the doors and windows for the winter. Sino Conservancy is having its own winter solstice celebration on December 22nd. So if you can't make it to the Eco Justice Center's celebration, you can certainly come out to Sino from 6 p.m. until 8 p.m. We'll have a celebration of this astronomical event with a crackling fire outside. We'll have some warm beverages or maybe cool ones, depending upon the temperature. There'll be a starlit hike through the prairie. There'll be an interactive story about the constellations, and you can fashion your own beautiful paper star for your holiday decorations for just to commemorate this event. It's free and it's open to everybody. Also, the predictions are that we will get snow towards the middle of January through February. And so in an effort to make that happen, we at Sino Conservancy are going to have a snowshoe building workshop. And that will take place on